Well, that music can only mean one thing. Hello, I'm Martin Stark, and welcome to the latest edition of the Total Saints podcast. This is our weekly get-together with a panel of Saints experts to discuss all things Southampton Football Club. As always, we're live streaming our podcast on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and now on Twitch. So thank you for watching tonight. A massive thank you as well to our TSP patrons, and a huge welcome to Matt Rose, who's joined our Mick Shannon tier last week. So we appreciate your support, Matt. Remember, anybody who joins our Francis Benali or Mick Shannon tiers before the end of August will get themselves an exclusive TSP t-shirt. Just head to patreon.com/Total Saints Podcast and you can find out more. Now, as mentioned last week, we're doing shout outs for anyone who leaves us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. So a huge shout out to those people who actually did that this week. We had Duncan, Daniel G, John Tilbury, John Lush, Matt Bushby, and Henry Thomas. They all went on and left us a review. Henry said it's more enjoyable than watching Saints, which is quite a low bar at the moment, but we'll take it. So thank you. It really does help us get found on the podcast app. So anyone who leaves us a review and a rating this week will also get a shout out next week. It's here to stay. Head to Apple Podcasts, find the Total Saints podcast on there, and be sure to leave us a review and a rating. That's the shameless plug bit over and done with. Coming up on this week's episode, reaction to the first home game of the season against Leeds United. Going to preview that trip to Leicester at the weekend, and I make it 17 days left in the transfer window. So we'll have a chat about what work needs to be done. Let me introduce you to our panel for this week. Steve Grant is the owner of Saints Web. Glenda Lacour is the writer of the blog League One Minus 10, and Jacob Tanswell covers all things Southampton FC for The Athletic. Underpinned by our TSP patrons, this is episode 203 of the Total Saints podcast.
Your home for everything Southampton FC, from dedicated Saints insight to exclusive interviews. Live on YouTube every Sunday and available to download wherever you listen to your podcasts. This is the Total Saints Podcast.
So a spirited fight back and a strong finish rescued a point in the first home game of the new season against Leeds. 2-2 the final score. Let's get into it, Glenn. I'm going to start with you. What were your initial thoughts on that game yesterday?
Pleased to get a point at the end of it, obviously. I think when we looked at the fixtures at the start of the season, the first five games, this is one that most people earmarked as the one we had to win. As it turns out, suddenly the Leicester and the Manchester United games aren't looking quite as daunting as they were at the start of the season. Yeah, we're 20 minutes to go. Obviously, we're 2-0 down. We're not playing well. We don't look like we're going to score. And to get out of the game, with a 2-2 draw and generally being the team in the ascendancy at the end of the game was quite nice. So we came out of it feeling better about things than Leeds did, I'm sure, because it felt like a bit of a moral victory. The substitutions at the end of the game and the change of shape, which I'm sure we're going to get onto, that totally changed things. And whether Leeds just got tired, because I think Leeds were snapping into all the challenges really, really aggressively. And then whether it was because they just, we put them under a bit of pressure and they couldn't deal with it, or whether they got tired, I don't know. But we certainly took over the last 20 minutes, and it was nice to finish a game strong instead of being the team that
been
that
a while, isn't it?
Chucks it. Yeah. Well, I wonder if Jesse Marsh comes from the same school as Ralph, doesn't he? With the Red Bull connection. So I do wonder if his team are going to have the same sort of problem that we've had in the past, where they just can't play that way for 90 minutes, and they've got to find a way to get over the line. But that's their problem. Happy enough to get a point in the end. And I think more importantly, the last 20 minutes raised everyone's spirit a bit, and it should have given Ralph a shot in the arm after what had been quite a tough week, and a very tough week for him, I'm sure. Yeah, mostly I came away feeling a lot better about things than I did at Spurs last week.
There's lots of questions, as you might imagine, already coming in about the formation and the starting lineup. Steve, let's get your thoughts on that. Was it a good result in the end? Would you have settled for a point against Leeds?
I think at half time there was kind of not an awful lot in the game. I think Leeds had two shots on target, but the shots that we'd had, I felt were decent chances. We just not hit the target with them. So kind of at half time, you're thinking, well, there's kind of not an awful lot in this game. With the heat, actually, a point's probably not an awful result. Just get something on the board, get out of there and sort of start to build. And then obviously we basically didn't turn up at the start of the second half. I mean, that 15 minutes straight after half time was just abject. And you, at that point, you're thinking, I mean, as soon as that second goal goes in, you're thinking, well, I mean, there's going to be questions, serious questions asked in the boardroom.
I thought there was no way back. Honestly, I thought that's it.
I got messages from a couple of people when that second goal went in, sort of along the lines of, well, this, I mean, surely he's not going to survive this. And then, I mean, the substitutions that he made, I don't know if you saw, but they were basically they were already ready to go before Leeds scored. So a little bit unfortunate in that regard, in that if we just dealt with that corner, and we didn't deal with any of their corners all afternoon, again, basically the same thing every time, outswinging ball into the near post, flick onto the far post, and someone's unmarked. We got away with it in the first half, but not so much after the break. But that change was already about to be made even at 1-0. So yeah, a little bit frustrating in that sense, that actually we might have gone on to win the game if we were only 1-0 down at that point. But then, I mean, it's one of those you can never really tell, because different events change the game and no two scenarios are ever the same. But no, it's a decent point from where we were with 20 minutes to go. I mean, we could, if there were serious questions, I think, in terms of the sort of so-called losing the dressing room and that sort of thing, I don't think that last 20 minutes happens. Because if a group of players are quite happy for the manager to go, then they'll just coast through that last 20 minutes, take a 2-0, or even let them score another. They'll come through and score another one, and then everything happens very quickly. Whereas all of a sudden now, the talk now is that, well, they've shown character to come back from 2-0 down in a difficult situation, tough conditions for everybody. Blinding hot out there, and I mean it was hot enough for those of us who were in the shade
sat watching it. Yeah.
I mean, at pitch side, I would imagine it must have been like 40 odd. It's absolutely ridiculously hot, and to come out of that game with a point, having shown a little bit of strength in depth off the bench, which we haven't had for a while, really, is no. I mean, that's a positive, but it's got to be. We've got to kind of harness that and take that forward, and take the good bits of yesterday out of the game, and toss the rubbish stuff to one side. And I mean, we'll get onto the formation and the setup and stuff, I'm sure. But the three centre backs just patently isn't working, and that's, I mean, from Saturday. I think that's got to go.
Yeah. Yeah, well, again, plenty of questions about that, so we will get on to that. Jacob, welcome back. We obviously didn't put you off with episode one, so great to have you back. Let's deal with the elephant in the room first. Obviously, you can't say too much about the rumours and things that were written this week about the manager, but he seemed a little perhaps spiky after the game yesterday, and he almost brought it up himself.
Yeah, he did. I asked him the first question about, you know, is he quite happy to see that response off the last 20 minutes to show that the players are, you know, still fighting for him, and they went on the front foot, nice and brave. And he straight away just referenced the article that came out, what was it, Thursday evening, Friday? And he kept referring to it after every question, essentially. So he was obviously perturbed by it. It's something that he's not too happy about, because he's always preached having a close-knit, tight unit, hence why he's always wanted 18 to 20 first-team players, because he wants everyone involved. And the problem is, at the moment, is, you know, we haven't got that long off the window left, but there's still a lot of flux in the squad. Players are going to be going out, some that started yesterday, some that were in the squad, and these stories do not help anything. So Ralph just needs to get through these next 2-3 weeks, and then I like to think, and I think he thinks as well, that things can eventually just calm down a little bit. But yeah, it wasn't the most useful thing to be coming out before a key game like Leeds.
And in your experience as a sports journalist, we're just fans, you're the sports journalist, these kind of stories, is it just that journalists like yourself that build up relationships with agents and players, is it somebody going to be tipping off a journalist somewhere and going with it? Because we'll say, like, you know, there's no smoke without fire, but is it to do with the transfer window, people trying to get moves away? Is there like more than one thing involved here?
It can be, but I don't think that type of story's probably been bubbling, or they've been planning that for longer than just the transfer window. There's more reasons behind it, but it depends on the website, stuff like that. So some sort of websites or companies like we do, we get things double, triple, even quadruple source. So we're never just relying on one single source at any point. Others obviously have a different system, stuff like that. So I don't know what the mails is, but they obviously had quite strong beliefs about it. So
quite often not zero. Yeah,
not checked by anybody, I would imagine. Ralph does know that the Daily Mail is what you use when you run out of toilet paper.
You've probably been told that, yes. Yeah. But yeah, so it depends on the company. But yeah, it's usually from, you know, the likes of the agents, players, people inside the club. It can be from multiple people, really.
And I wonder if the transfer window being open until September has a bit of an impact as well, because, of course, last year it shut before the season started, didn't it? So all these rumours about players leaving were put to bed before the season kicked off.
Exactly. That's why Martin Semmers is an advocate for shutting down that window before the first ball's been kicked. Because you know, the likes of Ward-Prowse, I know he's not been linked to a big club yet, but there's always going to be that what if, you know, until September. So if Sam's can get the house in order as early as possible to warn off the big boys from, you know, the key players, that is a really important thing. And I think Southampton would have been happy with that as well, because they would have been well set. They could have also encouraged, you know, the likes of Nathan Redmond, Jack Stevens, who are on the periphery, to go and find moves sooner rather than just wait and see how the, you know, first couple of games unfolds.
Okay, let's get back to the game yesterday, Glenn. We always knew that the subs would be key when we saw that starting lineup. But were you surprised at the impact that they had?
I was surprised at the impact that Adam Armstrong had, because he's not really had much of an impact in many games that he's played. He's obviously not a left winger by trade, but he, you know, he added a sort of some directness and actually, you know, was very keen to run forward, which was the problem we had at Tottenham. No one seemed to wanted to run forward. So he did that. Joe Aribo, I was dumbfounded that he was left out in the first place, because he was one of the better players at Tottenham, albeit very isolated. So when he come on, you know, that immediately picked things up. The two players that went off, Stuart Armstrong didn't have his best game, and Elianusi had his normal game, where he did a couple of nice things in the first half. But I noticed how static he is. You know, when we're trying to build up play, he tends to stand behind a player and he's unavailable to pass the ball to. So I thought he was very poor. So I'm not surprised that bringing those two, you know, I mean, initially it was like for like changes, wasn't it? And it was only when Sekou Mara came on that he took Bednarek off. And that kind of solved two problems, because I'm a big advocate of the back four, for the simple reason that the defenders, the two, you know, the centre-backs have to take responsibility. When there's only two of them, they have to take responsibility. Everyone's brought up playing that system more or less. You know what you've got to do. You know you can't leave a ball and expect the third centre-half to bail you out. And I thought the performances of Bella Kochab and Salisu went up a notch as soon as Bednarek went off. Not necessarily because Bednarek wasn't there, but because they knew they had to take responsibility. You know, it's a bit risky because you had Musa playing in a left-back in a flat-back four. So I'm still not sure you can do that from the start of a game until you've got a proper left back fit.
But you were impressed with Gineppo yesterday, weren't you?
Yeah, in the first half, I thought he was certainly our brightest player going forward. I mean, defensively, he's a train wreck. He's all over the place. But
there was a moment for me where I think the ball, we all thought it had gone out for a goal kick, but actually it had stayed in. I don't know whether it hit the corner flag. And Gineppo was so desperate to get back in formation. Everyone was screaming at him it's still in play. It's still in play. You've got to chase it back. But it's almost like his first thought was that I need to get back. I need to get in that formation, because that's where I've been found out before.
He's trying, and you cannot blame him, because he's putting in 100% effort to try and do something that he's totally not suited to doing. He's probably never had to do it in his career, and he is trying his best. And I love him for that. The fact that he is trying to, you know, he's doing what the manager wants him to do. And it's unfamiliar. How many players do you see around the Premier League who, you know, they're in a different position, so they sulk, or something's not going right, so they sulk. He tries his best, and I thought he had a really good game. And in the second half, when we obviously, you know, we were behind, so he had more license to bomb forward, I thought I thought he did well. And obviously, you know, Sekou Mara came on, and you know, that's some pass for the second goal.
Yeah.
And it was just a shame that his his zero backlift hammer of a shot in the last minute didn't find the top corner, because that would have been a moment, and that would have got our comments section from the Leeds fans going was absolutely mad. Hi Leeds
was
fans.
Was it David Batty they said you look like this week?
I've had a few. It's just like generic face I've got.
My favourite part when we do the preview of the next game, the away fans all pile on and they find some ex-player that Glenn vaguely resembles.
Yeah.
I look forward to that this week. Let's get into the formation. Stuart says, with the next three league games coming up and what those teams have done to us over the past three seasons, can Ralph afford to persist with the formation? I'll be honest, I was scratching my head yesterday when I noticed that we were going to persevere with that. And even more so after 70 minutes, Steve, when this is the formation that's supposed to make us a bit more secure at the back. And then before you know it, that's six goals this season we've conceded already. So were you surprised with the three or the five as it is, and are we done with that now? Have we got to go back to the 4-2-2-2?
I wasn't surprised because ultimately we've been training that all pre-season and there's been very little deviation from it. There was obviously a very sort of defined idea behind it, the idea being that if you put more and more defenders in there, then hopefully that creates less space for the opposition to kind of have the freedom of our penalty area to score goals against us. Clearly, it's not worked that way. I mean, you only have to look at their Leeds' first goal, 20, 30 seconds into the second half, where having had two or three attempts to clear it, the ball ends up with Harrison on the left wing. And even though we've got five defenders, he's somehow got 15 yards of space in which to put the cross in. Our problem isn't really the number of defenders that we've got in the middle of the team. The problem is that we're allowing the ball to come into our box all the time. One of the key things with that great team that we had for three or four years under combination of Pochettino, Koeman, and I mean, arguably the first half of Claude Puel's season as well, was that we basically barely let the ball go into our box ever. It was so rare that we would let the other team have sort of unopposed crosses into the box. The only time they'd ever get away with it is if they were launching it in from deep, from like the halfway line. So you've then got loads of time while the ball's in the air to adjust and get yourself in position. If you're letting the ball come in from sort of anywhere sort of in line with the 18-yard box and sort of closer to the goal line, you've got no time to adjust. And that's where the quality of Premier League players comes to the fore, because that quality of delivery is a class above, and you've got to just stop it at source. And that's what we've not been doing. And you could see that, like, even Carl Walker-Peters was inside the penalty area when that cross came in. It's like, you're the wing back, you're supposed to be the one that's the widest, and then you might even get help from from one of your midfielders. But we didn't have that. Adams was chasing back desperately because he'd shanked the ball to Harrison in the first place, and Walker-Peters was too far infield, which then meant that the three centre backs were too far infield as well, and we were just completely at sixes and sevens. You've got Salisu wasn't tight enough to Rodrigo in the first place, and then as well as letting him drift away from him, Bednarek lets him run across the front of him, and he's got more or less a tap in from there. I mean, I saw a couple of people saying, oh, Bazuna will be disappointed to be beaten at his near post. It's like, no. The guy's hit it hard from 6 yards out.
Yeah.
You've got no chance.
Yeah.
The only way he saves it is if it hits him.
Every goal that Bazuna let in was, you know, like an unmarked player 6 yards out.
Yeah.
And I mean, the other thing about this goes to the back three thing as well, because if you look at the movement that Rodrigo made, it's a good run. He moves away from Salisu and he darts in front of Bednarek. But the way that's supposed to work is there's supposed to be some communication there, where Salisu obviously tells Bednarek that he's your man
coming
now. Bednarek had his back to him. You know, the old thing of looking at the number, you know, Rodrigo could see Bednarek's number. Bednarek had no idea where he was. So he just darted in front of him. And that's the problem with the three at the back, the way we play it, I think, is the lack of communication. So, and we're going to make mistakes, you know, we're going to make mistakes whether we have two at the back or three at the back. So we might as well have an extra forward on the pitch.
An extra body that can make up for it at the other end. I think kind of the second part of your question in terms of whether we're going to ditch that, I don't see he's got any choice now. You've seen the chalk and cheese differences. I mean, yeah, sure, we were... I would actually argue that the formation in that last 20 minutes wasn't really the 4-2-2-2. It was just out and out 4-2-4. It was like the late 80s again, where we had the Wallace brothers ride out and
it was every striker available. And Leticia, wasn't he? Like,
yeah. And I mean, that's not sustainable. As a starting formation, you'll get torn to pieces because there's no control in the midfield and you need a solid base. So yeah, I mean, the way we ended the game, there's no way we're starting any game ever playing that way. But it showed what we can do, when we need to kind of crank it up a little bit, especially against a side. I mean, Leeds defensively are not going to be good. They had a terrible defensive record last year, signed a couple of players this season, but they're not bedded in yet. They're still going to struggle defensively. So, yeah, we showed that they can be got at. Even in the first half, when we were a little bit sluggish at times, we still kind of carved them open a couple of times. It just didn't quite fall for us. So, yeah, it wasn't as if that first 70 minutes was absolutely diabolical. It was probably just that first 15 to 20 in the second half. But, yeah, I think realistically we're gonna be working all week on a back four and some sort of combination in front of that hopefully gives us a little bit of control, because Leicester quite like chaos football, don't they? Particularly through the centre of the park. If you just need some of them to stay on James Maddison, really.
Yeah.
Arsenal tore them to pieces yesterday.
Well, Venom F1X says the 4-2-2-2 is in our blood, which I think is fair. And FPL Swat says, would be interesting to see if Ralph is bullish enough to stick with the five. Jacob, we got your thoughts on this kind of preseason. You've seen it up close and in personal now, a couple of games. What are your thoughts on the new formation? Are we overanalyzing this too much as fans, or is it not working for you either?
No, definitely not. I think the crux of the matter is that Ralph doesn't trust his defenders to defend 1v1 anymore. I think he just, like I say, end of his tether with it in terms of Jan Benrick up against a striker, Solis up against a striker. I just feel he always feels he needs that extra defensive reassurance like he did when he first came in. Just to go on to the crosses, I think they conceded 22 crosses at White Hart Lane or whatever the stadium's called now. They're very vulnerable to crosses, especially on transition, because the two wing backs go very, very high. They're basically on the back line of the opposition defence. So it's essentially a five across the front line, and that leaves half of your outfield players in front of the ball. So if you do lose it, those defensive channels, either side of Bella Kotchap or Solis or whoever plays on the outside centre-backs, is there to attack. And that's where you always see the crosses coming from. So they're very, very vulnerable. I think it's been, four crosses that have resulted in goals so far? So that's something that needs to be fixed. Whether you can hold back one of the wing-backs, but then you take away from, of course, one of the players more advanced. Whether he changes, I'm not too sure, because he hasn't yet got that experienced centre-back that he needs and he wants. So I think he might stick with it. I keep going back to it. I'm shocked he didn't play with back four at any point in pre-season. Just a little bit of variety, just to train those, muscle memory again. Because when he went back to it, the pressing was much better. But he knows he's taking a risk with it. And I don't feel he trusts the system or his defence enough to play 90 minutes 1v1 at the back, especially if it's Jan Bednarik. So I'm not sure if he will. I think he'll stay with 3-5-2.
Do you think we still might see that again?
I do. I think he might play two tens like he did yesterday, whether it's Joe Armstrong and with Joe Aribo. But the back three looks here to stay until he gets experience at defender.
And I know that you've written a piece about this, I think, for tonight or for tomorrow, but the conversations that Ralph's now having with his new coaching staff, and we touched on this a little bit last week, it's evident now, isn't it? You can see that there's more people having input into the changes. He's not on his own in that technical area anymore.
No, I think that's definitely needed, because I think it's been Ralph's way of the highway, hasn't it, at some point in the last couple of seasons, where you see Alex Clapham, the first team coach, he's now taking charge of set pieces. He comes out sometimes for attacking defending set pieces. Carl Martin has been promoted from the under-18s. He sits next to the analysts, which I find really interesting, and he's now in charge of spotting spaces, feeding the back to the bench in terms of where Slamton can exploit the other team in possession. And Ruben Sellers, every time there's a drinks break or injury, he comes out and he has individual chats with players, and I'm not sure that would have always happened. And there was a point in the second half after they went 2-0 down where Sellers actually came out with Ralph and he gave him a few words. That was just before the drinks break. So Sellers has clearly got some autonomy now to have a word with Ralph. And I think that's really key, because the drinks break, there was four of them all talking, and that was when they decided to go back to the 4-2-2-2, and see Kumara came on and look what happened. So it's much better, and it takes the load off Ralph as well, because there's been so often where I felt they're losing 1 or 2-0 and the rest of the first team coaching staff do not talk to him at any point. I just feel really what's there?
They're almost too nervous to interrupt his thoughts.
I don't think they felt they were qualified, or they didn't have the power or the character to do so. So I think Sellers, with his experience, and he's really highly rated, I think the players really like him. He's really good at, I know he hasn't shown so far, but he drills the defence really well, and apparently he's really good at doing the basics. So I think he's got responsibility, and he's now got that reputation now where he can go to Ralph without without fearing what's to come back at him.
Yeah, getting his head torn off. Glenn, there's two ways of looking at this. Yesterday, I was with 70 minutes on the clock. I was like, right, I'm done. You know, if he gets sacked tonight, I don't care. He's had his chance now. I'm just fed up with this. And it was audible when he was at 70 minutes was on the clock, and we were still playing with three centre backs. And he made that change, as you say, didn't change the formation, and the crowd singing, you don't know what you're doing, you're getting sacked in the morning and stuff. And I was all like, right, I'm done. For me, that last 20 minutes proved that there is enough talent in that squad, and they can produce good football. They're just not set up properly. And for me, that comes back to him. Am I wrong? Was it brave of him to change the game and bring those subs on? And should he get more credit for that? Am I looking at it the wrong way?
Because he had to change it, because we didn't look like scoring. And that's the problem with it. Whenever we played this formation, be it this season or last, we haven't played well ever with it. We won the game against Arsenal at the tail end of last season playing that way, but we were largely dreadful.
Yeah,
you know, we scored a goal and then Fraser Forster saved everything. That was it.
Shane Long charging down that shot at the end.
But we've never played well in this formation. And it was obviously something he wanted to, you know, he talks about automatisms and all this sort of stuff. And that was obviously what he wanted to do in pre-season, is to get people doing these things. But for me, he's got over-obsessed with defensive solidity. And with Southampton, we're never going to have that. He had to do something, and it was brave to change it, but he didn't have a lot of choice. I mean, probably the pressure he was under as a result of the Daily Bloody Mail, maybe that fed into it. He thought, well, I might as well go for it. And but you know, we could come back to the sort of bravery point. You know, like I've said before, it's a bit of a cringe when we used it regarding the kit launch and all that stuff. But you've got Bella Kochap and Salisu. They're 20, 21, 22, whatever they are. You've got to trust these guys. You can see already they're our best two central defenders. So, you know, trust them. That's what you've got to do. I do understand the issues with the back four and that we haven't got a left back at the moment. And I don't know where Perreault was yesterday, because he wasn't even on the bench. Which is, maybe Jacob knows anything about that, but it seemed a bit worrying that he was on the bench last week and he wasn't even on there today, yesterday, and you would have expected him to be there. He doesn't seem to want to use Jan Valeri as a fullback, which, again, that surprised me in the last couple of minutes, that it was Jack Stevens that got brought on, when I thought they brought Valeri and swapped Walker Peters over. Doesn't seem to want to do that. So it's difficult to go to a flat back four if you've only got Moussa as your left back. He could have done nothing. You know, in the past, I've thought Ralph is so stubborn, he kind of just expects what he's doing to work at some point. And I'll give it another 20 minutes, and I'll give it another 20 minutes, and then we've lost. But
lessons learned.
you roll the dice when you're a football manager, and it works or it doesn't. And if it works, you get praised. If it doesn't, or you don't do anything, you get slaughtered for it. So I think you've got to give him praise for getting it right this time. And the players he put on all made a difference. Some of the selections he made at the start made a huge... I thought Che Adams had a great game. He didn't cover himself in glory with one.
Not a lot of service, was there? But
no, but he battled constantly. Mm. And if you look at the two goals and the chance that Sekumara had at the end, Che Adams is involved in every single one, either holding the ball up and played the 1-2 with Armstrong that led to the first goal. So that was a good selection. I thought Bella Kochap was largely, you know, pretty good. It was a lot better from Ralph's point of view yesterday, but we can't play this three at the back system and expect to score many goals, because we just don't. I think we need more pace further up the pitch if we're going to play that way, because we're sort of playing a lot deeper than we normally do. I mean, there was the incident the first half where Stuart Armstrong was wiped out by Llorente, and it got VAR reviewed, didn't it?
Yes.
I think it's one of those ones where if the referee had given the free kick and sent him off, I don't think it would have got overturned.
They would have backed up. I was going to ask, it's dogs though, isn't it? This is the denying of a goal scoring opportunity. I was going to ask you about this. It was 15 minutes, wasn't it?
And it's pretty early.
It was pretty early on in the game. You think, well, you know, that could be the break that we need.
I mean, in real time, I thought it was a great tackle from where I was stood, because it looked like the ball changed direction. It looked like he'd just stretched and got there. Because, I mean, let's be honest, we know that Stuart Stu Armstrong isn't the fastest. I mean, he's got a yard of pace, but he's not sort of over a distance. I don't think he's winning any sprint challenges.
Just the last one on the yesterday, Steve, was that for you? Was that like a get out of jail card? If we lose that game 2-1, then it's a very different discussion that we're having tonight and very different messages. The last Guitar Hero, watching on YouTube, he says, looking forward to a new manager, and then we equalised. It kind of felt like that, didn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, yeah, it's one of those where, I mean, your mood is always sort of predominantly swayed by the end outcome, isn't it? But I think if we'd shown what we showed in the last 20 minutes, but we only had one goal to show for it, I kind of think we'd probably still be having the same discussion now. I think it would be the same tone, because you could have seen what we were trying to do and what was going on and what the players were kind of putting into it, even if they didn't get the reward from it, because ultimately the situation would have been that they'd just left themselves too much to do in that short space of time. I think if we'd collapsed to a fairly dismal 2-0 or worse result, then yeah, I mean, the conversation would be very different, but it's not. So
here, Jacob, finish us off on a positive. Just some comments on the some of the new starters making their home debuts yesterday. In particular, I thought Lavia was pretty good, and obviously Aribo when he came on.
Yeah, I think I really, really just enjoy watching Lavia as a footballer. I think he's fantastic. And what I really was impressed with, we saw a different side of him yesterday, because against Spurs, I was really impressed with the way he resisted pressure, he turned out, switched play. Everything in possession was really good. And then you get to the Leeds game in that first half, which was just full of turnovers, ping pong, not really, Southampton really couldn't really get any control, sustained possession. And I think he made 6 passes, which was only Che Adams made less or something like that. 8 passes or something. So he didn't really have a lot of the ball, but yet he made the most interceptions. And I just found he really battled in there, because it's tough against Leeds. They're energetic. They haven't got time on the ball. They play a very similar narrow style that Southampton used to play. So for an 18-year-old, you know, his second Premier League appearance, he wasn't perturbed. He kept his calm. And as the game wore on, I think I watched the game back, the last 15 minutes especially, he was intercepting and winning so many balls, switching the play out to Gineppo, to Walker Peters, who were the three men. I thought he's really good. And Joe Aribo as well. He can play anywhere across the front four. He presses well, and he looks like he's a good finisher as well. And that's something Southampton need. I was quite surprised he didn't play from the start, but I think the 5 subs, which Ralph has been an advocate for, you know, turned out well, because as Marsh hesitated and dithered, Ralph got the subs on, got Aribo on. And if it is Celes with the notepad and pen, they both deserve some credit. So, yeah, really impressed by them. And Bela Kotchev, I think he loves no underlap, doesn't he? Yeah, I think he does 2 or 3 50-yard sprints as well, just getting forward. And that's one of the more positive aspects of the back three. I'm not sure he could do that, just him and Salisu at the back. But, yeah, I'm really impressed. They look fearless. I thought Bazuna as well. Good save from Bamford and Daniel James, sorry, from the first half. And it's been 6 goals, and it's not really one where you can say it's his fault. So if he can just come through this, he can keep his confidence intact, then it should serve him better in the long run.
There was a lot of nonsense on Twitter yesterday, and after the game, I was like, right, fully Ralph out, putting it out there. I'm absolutely done. And had all sorts of interesting conversations with people. The tweet that annoyed me the most yesterday was actually yours, Jacob, about Lavia and when he was born. January 2004,
yes.
And was it Hey Yeah by Outkast was top of the charts. I remember playing that on the radio, and that just made me feel so old yesterday. When I read that, I thought, right, I'm done with Twitter for the night. I'm done.
We were like 5th in the table at that January 2004, weren't we?
Go on, Glenn.
No, it's funny you mentioned being, you know, DJ. The DJ at St Mary's, did he deliberately mean to play American Idiot at half time because of the opposition manager? That was an interesting one.
The full time give it away now, wasn't it?
On the for a team that's just thrown away a 2-0 lead. Yeah. Well, we all know that they're a bit fond of their pointed choices. So yeah, I thought American Idiot was a nice touch, especially when he was said he was doing he went full Klopp. Fist pump down the line when they won a corner, which I thought was absolutely bizarre behaviour, but there you go.
Let's get on to the Leicester game. So welcome to all the Leicester fans that are going to be piling in and watching this on YouTube. Last season, we lost 4-1, but to be fair, Glenn, we checked out months before, haven't we? That was just like the game that none of us really wanted. The players didn't want it. We didn't want to watch it. We didn't want to talk about it afterwards. So I don't know if we can take too much from that, but it's going to be a different game this time around.
Well, let's hope so. Leicester have not started well. They seem to be in some sort of financial predicament. They've not signed a single player, I don't think. Lost their goalkeeper, who's been there for 10 years or so, and the replacement doesn't look very good. So, maybe they'll swoop it. Maybe they're one of them, the myriad of clubs looking to sign Alex McCarthy from us. But there does seem to be some issues going on there. And you talk about the transfer window and disrupting some teams. I mean, I think I read today they've had a bid accepted for Fofana, or he's agreed personal terms or something like that. So he may not even be playing against us. Madison's been linked away. Tielemans has been linked away. You know, they've still got Jamie Vardy, who's now 35, I think. So they do seem to be in a spot of bother, and it couldn't happen to a nicer guy than Brendan Rodgers. So who I'm still angry with over Ricky Lambert from all those years ago. So I can hold a grudge for a long, long time. So it'd be interesting to see what Leicester turns up. As Steve mentioned earlier, they got ripped apart by Arsenal, who are, of course, a very good side this year, or they look it, certainly at the start of the season. So it'll be interesting to see how Leicester go. It's I know we've had some decent results up there in the past, but the last couple of games that we played against them, I've just thought they looked kind of too good for us, really. But they're not going to have the confidence that they normally go into a game with against us. So I personally hope that we do bin off the three at the back and we go for it. Maybe not with the kamikaze way that we went with the last 20 minutes yesterday. But, you know, I do hope we try and get on the front foot, because I don't think it's a game that we're going to win by trying to contain them. Because we're, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be like a basketball game and it's going to end up 7-6 to someone, but I do feel we need to get on the front foot to have the best chance of getting anything out of that game. So, I'm looking forward to it a lot more now than, you know, having seen them get beat again yesterday and us finish the game strongly. It's one that I'm actually looking forward to now and thinking we might actually get something out of it.
And Steve, it's a good fixture against a team who are under pressure for a win, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of seemingly a lot of discontent in their both in their fan base and in possibly even in the squad. Given that, I mean, they kind of underachieved a little bit last year, albeit with distraction of European football, where they got to the semi-finals of the Conference League, didn't they, in the end? Mm. So obviously played a lot of football, seemingly had about 15 players out injured at any one time, which doesn't seem to be letting up at all. Despite having had a full summer to try and recharge batteries and everything, they still seem to be dropping like flies up there. So yeah, they're a funny team that on their day can tear the best to pieces. But I mean, they're kind of a better version of us, I think, a more stable version of us. In that, as I say, on their day they can compete and beat anybody. But at their worst, they are an absolute train wreck. And it's basically down to us to try and force the latter part. I mean, personally, I would want us to be paying particular attention to Madison, because he always seems to have a good game against us. If you stop the supply of ball into his feet, all of a sudden their options are very, very limited. So I think if you're able to get someone in and around him, sort of almost, I mean, not even necessarily just man mark, but kind of shadowing the area kind of in front of him, so the ball just doesn't reach him in the first place, then yeah, all of a sudden then when we win it back, we're able to spring on the counter-attack, and we've got, all of a sudden, we look like we've actually got some good options in certain areas.
Hmm. And Jacob, do you think it helped that we're away from St Mary's, maybe pressure off a little bit? Because yesterday you just felt like, you know, that stray pass or when that second goal went in, then it definitely turned. So maybe this could be a good fixture, or one of the better ones we could ask for away against a team that need a point.
Possibly, but I like to think that Leicester's problems are also Saints inflicted too, because Martin Glover's not allowed to work until September 1st. And the issue is one of the reasons why they haven't signed anyone is because they've got too big a squad, because the likes of Ryan Bertrand and Yannick Vestergaard, they can't shift on. So really, Southampton, you know, are the root of their problems. So that could be a positive taken into the game, but as well as the being as well as being away from home as well. But I think the Saints fans, on the whole, I know there was a few boos and stuff like that. I think, especially in the first half, I thought they stayed with the team, because I've been in different stadiums and stuff like that where it's become really fractious quite early on. And it's only after the second goal where I thought, okay, this is bad. Yeah. So, yeah, Saints away from hasn't been too good recently, but let's just hope it changes on Saturday.
Let's do some predictions then. So our little predictions league that we do, 3 points for the correct score, 1 point for the correct result. Ben, Glenn, Alex, Steve, and myself all came away with a point after the weekend. Alfie House, who was with us last week from the Echo, correctly predicted the 2-2 draw. So he automatically storms into the lead at the moment with 4 points. Alfie's going with a 2-2 draw again. We checked in with him earlier. Big boss Ben reckons we're going to lose 2-1. I don't think we can get much out of this. I'm going for a 2-0 defeat. I think we'll get caught chasing the game. I'm going to come to you first, Steve. Your thoughts on the...
Goals, I think. Defensively, they're poor. I mean, we've all seen what we can offer up defensively as well. So yeah, I think it's gonna be an entertaining one. It's just a
case of,
I mean, ultimately, I'd take a 0-0, but I just don't see it happening. Probably, I don't know, 3-2 Leicester.
3-2. Right. Glenn, score prediction from you, please, sir.
I'm gonna have a madness and predict Saints to win 2-1.
2-1. All right.
Yeah, I think we've got a bit of momentum going into the game after that 20 minutes, and they'll be keen to keep that going. So I think we're playing them at a good time. I might be talking complete and out of cobblers and we'll get hammered, but you know.
Jacob, you agree we're taking the momentum into the game on the front foot here?
I do, and it's funny because that was the first thing Alfie said to me after the game. He got the prediction right. I think he honestly was absolutely buzzing about it. I was going to say 2-1, but I don't want to copy Glenn, so I'm going to go 3-2 Southampton.
3-2 Southampton. Right, okay. So big important one as well, because next three games, obviously got Manchester United at home, then Chelsea at home, and then Wolves away. So we'll see.
6-pointer, Man United.
Well, yeah, definitely. Biggest cheer in O'Neill's pub yesterday, that was. Got a couple of minutes before we finish. Just want to talk about some of the transfer business. This week saw the greatest announcement, I thought, of a signing. I don't know if you saw Burnley's unveiling Nathan Teller with the spoof of Bruce Forsyth's Generation Game, which was brilliant. Jacob, a few more going to be going out, do you think, on loan? You talked about the size of the squad and Ralph looking to trim things down. There's obviously more work to be done there. Is it going to be a quiet week and everything's going to happen before the window closes?
I think we're just waiting for that day where just everything seems to happen, because there's so many players that, you know, the futures are uncertain. And even if they're playing, I think Southampton are quite open to them leaving. I did a piece earlier last week, and I'm not saying all nine who I mentioned will be gone. It's just nine are, you know, and potentially more as well, that Southampton are open to selling. So it could be busy in terms of player departures, but I think Southampton are going to try their hardest to get that experienced centre back in, and as well as obviously that striker as well, because the striker is so, so important. We've said it for, you know, 3-4 weeks now. Every game just seems to become even more glaring, doesn't it? So Southampton will keep being active, and it's going to be a really busy time, I like to hope, and I think so too.
Were you surprised, Glenn, to see Nathan Teller go out? And I wanted to ask, maybe like the pair of you, I don't know, and I was trying to think this week, when they say, oh, they're going out and he's going to Burnley, he's going to get some decent experience and he's going to come back. The same with Will Smallbone. I was trying to think of a player that their age that's gone out, done a season on loan, come back into the first team and made a difference. It normally ends up being loan, then another loan next year, and then they leave because they've got a year left or their contract expires. To me, it's like it doesn't happen like that. And every time you hear it, you think, oh, yeah, he'll come back and he'll be better. And I was struggling to think of a good example. If they're good enough, they'd be playing now.
I think their age is very significant. When Dinyl Simeu went out last year, he was only 19 or something, and he went out to Carlisle, was it? And, you know, and he largely did very well. Will Smallbone has been held back recently by his injuries, obviously. And because of him being the sort of player that he is, it would be good, very good for him to have a season in the Championship to, you know, to toughen him up and see whether he's suitable. I mean, I actually think he's got something to offer. So he may come back. Nathan Teller, I'm really not sure about, because for me, it always seems to be one step forward, two steps back for him. He reminds me a little bit of Michael Obafemi, in that he'll have one good game and then he'll be rubbish and he'll get substituted at half time and all this sort of stuff. So he's gone to Burnley, who now are a very good club to go to because of the manager they've got now and the way they're going to try and play football. So it should suit him. I'm a little bit skeptical about him. He's 23. That's what That's what I keep reminding myself. He's 23. It constantly annoys me that the Saints media team refer to him as Star Boy. He's 20 bloody three. It's not like he's 18. He's 23. You know, by the time he was 23, James Ward-Prowse had played 200 games or whatever, you know? I don't think it does him any favours. And so he's you know, he's gone to Burnley now. It'll be out of his comfort zone. And it's sink or swim time for him. If he tears it up in the Championship, then, you know, why not? We're not great in the wide positions. That's why we've got so many of them, because none of them have really cemented that place down. So he may come back and, you know, haven't had a great season there, or it may be apparent that that's the best level he's going to get to. But it's a big season for him, and it's a brilliant opportunity. I hope he grasps it.
And Steve, do you think we'll see these guys back and making a difference in our team, or do you think that there's only one way once this happens?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same viewpoint as Glenn, really. That, yeah, for the most part, generally when we end up loaning players out, if they're really young, then fine, okay, it's an experience building thing. You get to play first team football, come back, and then we'll reevaluate. But I think someone like Teller, who's been in and around the first team for what, 3 years now, at least, has been given quite a lot of opportunities. Not so much last season. There was that weird sort of 2 or 3 month period where he just vanished from off the face of the earth, without anybody really saying anything. Didn't sound like he was injured or anything, but just wasn't in favour. And yeah, I mean, hasn't really sort of made a compelling case for him to get any more opportunities, really, which is a shame, because I mean that period in lockdown where he kind of broke through in that Project Restart period, that was the kind of time where he kind of exploded onto the scene. You thought, oh wow, we've got one here, and unfortunately it's just not quite panned out that way.
Alfie's watching, by the way, on YouTube, Jacob, and he says you mustn't believe a word that he says. I think his version of events in the press box yesterday may differ slightly from yours.
Ask the witnesses of our, they'll beg to differ, Alfie.
Well, he'll be back with us next week. That's pretty much it for this week. Don't forget you can follow the Total Saints podcast on Facebook and Twitter. Have a look for @TotalSaintsPod. Our website is totalsaints.co.uk. That includes a link to our online shop where we've got all the Total Saints icon things. If you want to get in touch during the week, we'd love to hear from you. We've had loads of comments tonight. Apologies if we didn't get to yours. You can always get in touch during the week. You can drop us an email via the website, or you can get in touch via social media. And of course, we're also on Patreon, where should you wish, you can support the podcast with a monthly contribution. Lots of different tiers on there. Thank you to those in our Francis Benali tier and our Mick Shannon tier. So Dave Melton, Mark Atkins, Matt Hall, Nick Reed in the Francis Benali tier. We've got Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy, Nick Higston, Phil Cook and Matt Rose in the Mick Shannon tier. Thank you to Steve. Thank you to Glenn. Thank you to Jacob. We've got through a lot tonight. It's been warm, but it's been a pleasure. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.